a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant at the G, Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Baritex Community Bank Studios, located at Bobcat of Houston and Porter. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George on a Friday. Gotta get down on Friday, October 25th in the year of our Lord 2024. I am Paul Gallant. He is Joe George. We're all the way up in Porter at the grand opening of the Bobcat Houston Porter branch. It's just north of Kingwood. If you come by between 11 and 2 to see the new facility, there's some awesome stuff here. The whole team. Some snacks, 10% off parts and supplies. So we're going to be here until 3 o'clock, but you want to get here between now and 2. So, saw some Thursday night football last night. The Los Angeles Rams have a pulse again. They beat the Minnesota Vikings 30-20, and I can't help but feel a little bit of offensive coordinator hungry eyes here.
Oh, a little jealousy, Paul?
Oh, a little wandering eye, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. It was a fun game last night, and I kind of wish they would have hired Kevin O'Connell at one point. I'd like to meet Ryans, but he's a really good head coach. I know they lost, but what he's done with the Minnesota Vikings has been impressive. And then you have Sean McVay, who, I don't know, goes in and out of retirement, it feels like, every offseason now. But definitely feeling that jealousy a little bit as well today.
McVay's put on a pedestal, and sometimes I feel like a little bit too high of one, but he always figures out a way to make it work with the Rams' offense. I think they were down two offensive linemen. Hey, that wasn't an issue for them. And then on top of that, you saw what you saw with Kevin O'Connell and continuing to get pretty good play out of Sam Darnold. A lot of questions about the end of that game because of what was clearly a face mask call that wasn't made, but we're all talking about this Texans offense going into Sunday's game against the Indianapolis Colts. I still believe they're 5-point favorites per mybookie.ag. Promo code BET975 if you want to sign up for that. Bobby Slowick finally met with Houston media yesterday, the offensive coordinator of the Texans, and I would say probably the person at the very bottom of the list when it comes to Q ratings for Houston Texans. And he was asked about that god-awful end-of-game sequence against the Green Bay Packers last Sunday. Here he is talking about how one of the big issues for the Texans was, hey, we weren't getting up to the line of scrimmage quickly enough.
So, like, when we have if you have a play call that's fairly straightforward, that might not have a lot of demand on the quarterback or on other guys, a lot of times you're at the ball faster, the ball is being snapped faster, you're rolling faster. And then a lot of other times when the quarterback has a lot on his plate he has to handle, and that could be from a multitude of directions, it's going to take some more words, you know, so he's going to be in the huddle a little bit longer. And then when we break the huddle, we got to make sure we're getting set so he can see it, because sometimes it's him just getting prepared for the play. Other times he might be going to a different play, depending on what our look is. But those demand strain, you know, in between plays in particular. I'd say our biggest thing is not necessarily from the huddle to the ball right now. It's getting into the huddle, you know. Like when we get a play, when we make a play on offense, we have a tendency right now where we can get into the huddle later, even though CJ's ready. And that's been really a thing for us in practice this week, is, hey, we got to go from one play to the next, to the next, to the next. We got to keep that tempo up so we can do these things to help empower people to be in good positions.
Talk about your all-time long answers. Bobby Slowick is essentially saying in about a Gettysburg address worth of words that they are too slow getting into the huddle and getting out of the huddle. Jesus.
Yeah, there's little things he just dropped in throughout that. The ending's interesting, obviously, because that feels like almost like an accusation of guys just like not hustling back to the huddle for the next play. So pick up the pace, get there faster. Bobby Slowick probably do a quicker job of getting the play to C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud also then has to deliver that play faster. So they're slow.
7 weeks in.
Yeah, like that's and 25 weeks in? I mean, I think you got to count last season, same offensive coordinator, same head coach, I mean, and same quarterback. And the offense is 90% the same except for Kenyon Green, Stephon Diggs. So this is something that you should have been working on that shouldn't be a problem, actually, at all, because it's the exact same offense. It's the exact same quarterback in OC. So to hear them struggle, verbalize that they're struggling with this, is really kind of weird. That, like, this isn't something that they have down pat, you know, this far into their tenure together.
He's laying it at C.J. Stroud's feet a little bit there, too, because when you're on the field, I mean, it is, even if the quarterback's ready, it is on the quarterback to get everybody else up out of the huddle into the line of scrimmage. This is something that used to drive me crazy with Russell Wilson. So it's not the only thing. This is not the only quarterback and not only team that is slow getting in and out of the huddle. But my God, hey, listen, I appreciate the honesty from Bobby Slowick, but at the same time, this is peewee football stuff as brought up by Junior Broncos on our Twitch at ESPN 975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston. From Bobcat Houston up in Porter. Come on out, 10% off parts and supplies. More from Bobby Slowick yesterday. He's honest. Here he is taking ownership of their struggles trying to protect C.J. Stroud from getting murdered.
It's always a multitude of things. It's never just one thing, right? But, it's shown up probably about three times this year where we've had some issues in protection that are completely controllable. So for me, that starts with me. I'm not doing something right. I'm not coaching something right. I'm not saying things in a way that needs to be interpreted the way it needs to be interpreted. Because honestly, the things that we missed in the game are things that D'Amico's been giving us day one in training camp. So it's stuff that I know they've seen and they've done and they've knocked out before. Obviously, you're on the road. You're in Lambeau. Communication's going to be hard. You got a strain in that regard. But we've been working on that part of it for 4 weeks. We've been working on what it's like on a road game, even when we have a home game. We've been straining on silent. We've been going on silent cadence even on weeks like this. So, that's been an emphasis for us. You see it in the pre-snap. Now we got to see it in the post-snap, and I got to find a way to get that out of our game.
And training camp stuff. I do appreciate the honesty because it's the first time that, it's not just we can work on it. It's actually examples of what's gone wrong and people taking actual responsibility and not just saying that we have to be better, we have to communicate better, we have to do this and this and this. He's actually telling you what's going wrong, so I appreciate the honesty, but at the same time, it's kind of startling to hear it. When your coach is talking about training camp day one stuff and you've been working on something for 4 weeks, we heard Titus Howard, use the on-the-road excuse as well. We saw a lot of C.J. Stroud's struggles last year happen on the road. I'm almost curious now, if we should go back into his Ohio State record a little bit and see what he was like as a road quarterback at the Big House and things like that when he was there. But it's just, this stuff is, the positive is that it's all fixable. Like they're saying, this is all stuff that's fixable. It's not a talent issue. It's not we're not capable of doing this, but the fact that you're 7 weeks in and really a season and a half into all these problems, it's kind of startling that they're still having to work through them.
He's being honest, but yeah, he's sort of throwing himself under the bus here. And also throwing the team under the bus too. Hey, guys, shouldn't you be able to pick it up by now?
Yeah. Shouldn't you just know this stuff? Shouldn't we at the point where we don't have to, work on this for four straight weeks? Four straight weeks on the same thing. Are we not learning anything?
They need to go to summer school. Maybe they need to have longer training camp hours. And I know a lot of coaches say, hey, we don't have enough time in the offseason to work with these guys. And maybe that is actually true here. But Bobby Slowick's not making me feel any better. And it's funny. Yesterday, D'Amico Ryan, super positive about this getting changed. C.J. Stroud is saying, hey, be positive when the change comes. Okay, great. But, everything Bobby Slowick is saying here is making me feel worse about that happening against an Indianapolis Colts team that does have a pretty good defensive line on Sunday. Though, for what it's worth, the Texans did run all over them in that week one game. One last clip from Bobby Slowick, Texans offensive coordinator. He was asked about that 3rd-and-15 situation against the Packers. Once again here, he is honest. I don't know, though, that this makes him look any better or the Texans look any better or if it makes it seem like anything is likely to change against the Colts Sunday.
Starting point is, man, that's a bad call, right? So we go into it thinking hopefully we get inside leverage or off corner. Really what they've shown in similar situations is three guys across the end zone, off corner, inside leverage on tank. Gave him a route he scored on last year, really the same part of the field. And then instead we got outside leverage press, which is hard. That's not what the route's for.
They doubled Steph. So really for the quarterback, you got to get all the way to the backside answers, which would have been good on that play, but he's already been hit 12 times. You know, he's not, it's everything trickles down in the NFL, right? So it's not always any like one given play. I think what CJ did in that moment was 100% right. Like, we can't hold on to the ball. We got to get the ball out of our hands and look be darned a little bit, you know? So to me, like, it's the fact that we've had the protection issues early in the game that we're not confident being able to hang in the pocket.
Too long, didn't listen, we were screwed because of our protection. We called things that worked weeks ago, even though that protection was what it was on Sunday. How could you have any faith right
now?
No,
I mean, for him to say not confident in the pocket, not something you want to hear either from your offense coordinator when talking about your quarterback and how he's feeling. Because, you know, I don't think it's, you know, to the seeing ghosts that we've seen other quarterbacks deal with in the past where, you know, they're moving away from pressure that's not there. The pressure is actually there. Yeah, this is all – that's all not fun. That's all not fun stuff. Bobby Slowick needs to talk earlier in the week. We need to have better vibes going into the weekend, Paul. He needs to talk on Tuesdays. If he's going to be dropping all this negative Nancy stuff and
this,
truth
this
bombs.
This isn't negative Nancy. Yeah, he's being very honest, yeah. And the truth is very depressing. I almost want him to lie to me. You know what? It's funny. Like yesterday, we heard from D'Amico and CJ when they spoke at their media availabilities on Wednesday, and I was annoyed by the positivity and optimism. But, all right, maybe that's what I want. Because, honestly, the positivity and optimism, at the very least, makes me feel like there's a slim chance they can fix it. This is just like, yeah, man, we've been working on it, and we've been called some bad plays on Sunday.
Yeah, things are bad. They're not getting any better. Yeah, just let's move this up to Tuesdays. I still don't need the negative vibes from the truth telling that Bobby Slowick's given us. Because when it's a good thing, Paul, we don't talk about Bobby Slowick on Fridays. We only hear from him when it's negative. So let's just move that up in the week.
We won't talk about Bobby Slowick when things are good ever. We're gonna say C.J. Stroud was good because Bobby Slowick has very little impact on what this team does in a positive way.
Yes, in a very positive way. I mean, just calling plays, your quarterback has to execute them. And they just need to protect this weekend. Like, this weekend does feel very simple of just if you give your quarterback time, you're probably going to win this football game.
Maybe. I don't know. I think you run all over them again. I feel like they can't pass protect. Just give it to Joe Mixon because this is the new Bobby Slowick offense. It's give it to Mixon and figure it out.
And have C.J. Stroud play Superman on 3rd and 7+.
They're a high school football team, even though they're 5-2. And yeah, that's how far I've gone in just a couple of weeks after them beating the Bills. I mean, it's a high school offense. It's give it to Mixon. He'll figure it out. And crap, we can't really do anything else, even though we have a top-5 quarterback. Great. Awesome. Wonderful. Splendid. 713-780-3776 to call. To text, you can join us on YouTube as well, at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitch, at ESPN 975. We're at Bobcat of Houston up in Porter for their grand opening. You want to get here from 11 to 2, 10% off parts and supplies, plus there's some lunch provided here as well. Coming up next, the NFL refs. They're outdoing Bobby Slowick. At least something's worse than him today. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Bobcat of Houston and Porter.
That's right, haters in the building. Although we are at a different building, we're at Bobcat of Houston in Porter. 10% off parts and supplies from 11 to 2 p.m. And lunch is provided. You could also enter to win a brand new Bobcat ZT3000 with a 48-inch deck, an Arctic cooler, or an Echo trimmer and blower. Hell yeah. So it's a little north of Kingwood, right off of 69.
Right off of 69.
Right off 69. It's a tight squeeze after the exit.
I missed it.
You didn't just miss it, Joe.
I missed it twice.
Okay.
I missed it. I went around. I got a phone call because I got a sick little guy back home. And as I was taking a phone call, just drove right past it again.
Aww.
And I had to circle back twice.
That's the worst.
And so the second time around, I stopped at a gas station to get coffee. Because I was like, you know what? Just in case.
I think that you might have gotten a coffee, but I also think that you might have needed to get out of your car, take a walk because you're pissing yourself.
Yep. Yeah, take a little breather there.
I almost took somebody out on my way, here. It is a tight squeeze, so be careful. I'm not, I was cutting across four lanes, and this person was speeding in the right lane, and I hope that person is well. I saw a person come to the rear view really quick. But it's a cool spot here. We got all sorts of Bobcat tractors and stuff. I'll be honest, I don't know much about it, but it looks cool. They are definitely not going to let us take these for a test ride.
I was kind of thinking, like, could we... Which I think these ones right here, right in front of us.
I just want to doze some stuff.
Yeah,
I want to run some stuff over. I want to find a Prius and just run one of these things right over. I don't know if it would do anything, but it would be fun.
No, but we could definitely try. We could definitely try.
We got some texts here talking about Bobby Slowick facing the music and being honest, at the very least. Yesterday, a text asks, "Are we getting a David Carr 2.0 situation?" No, it's not that. David Carr didn't put in the work off the field. I think he'd be the first to admit that too.
Yeah, and we saw the offensive line last year struggle and then get better. And C.J. Stroud, he handled that really well last year. So, and for the most part, he's done really well this year under pressure. Last week was the exception. Even Minnesota, like I didn't think it was as bad as this last game. But throughout the entire season, he's had constant pressure. He's been hit a ton. He got hit 10 times in the Colts game the first time, plus being sacked 4 times in that game. And he played good football. So, it's not David Carr.
Yeah, look, David Carr was screwed from the beginning because he was supposed to have Tony Boselli, and Tony Boselli never played. The number one pick in the expansion draft. Sucks. Bleep happens, of course, but Carr didn't put in the work off the field. Stroud last year got better with the offensive line in front of him, despite it being a game of musical chairs. This year it has not improved to this point. We're 7 games in. Hopefully it does improve. Another text. You say it's fixable. I don't say it's fixable. I don't know if it's fixable.
They say it's fixable.
They say, and by they, we mean the Houston Texans say it's fixable. This person continues, maybe it's not. Maybe our guys are just dumb. I mean, that's what it feels like right now. That's what it feels like. I hate to say it, they're dumb, but I mean, are they picking up what's being told?
The way Bobby Slowick describes it, no, they're not.
Right.
The way he describes it, they're absolutely not.
It's on me. Maybe Bobby Slowick's explaining it on Espanol. I mean, when one of these guys is on Duolingo.
When they say they've been working on the same thing for 4 weeks, like, the only assumption I can make is that either the Texans either have very poor coaches who don't know how to actually teach anything, so they're trying to teach them the same thing over and over again and don't know how to communicate it, or the players are not really understanding it and retaining it. And it also is possible they just can't execute it.
Yeah.
That they might actually know what's going on. Like, it is possible Kenyon Green knows his responsibilities.
And don't get beat by stunts.
And it's just that bad at football that he can't not get beat by stunts.
We got another text. This is from Eric the Driver. Bobby, what needs to improve on the offense? Well, this is what Bobby's answer was. I was raised in a middle-class family in a neighborhood full of people that loved their lawns. I mean, Green Bay, Wisconsin is that.
Mm.
That was funny. That's true. One last text. The beauty of this game is you can always redeem yourself with an A-plus performance this Sunday. Let's bleep and go, Texans.
Four. Can you redeem yourself?
No.
Yeah.
It's the Colts. It's the Lions. That game, Sunday Night Football, that's where you can redeem yourself.
Yep.
If the offense is capable for a full game, CJ's not running for his life. And they'll have Nico Collins back for that one. But, I mean, these next two games, you're just going to have to MacGyver this thing together without him. And to this point, they have not been able to. I mean, Nico Collins out of the Texans' offense has been a massive blow for now the past two seasons.
Well, I don't know. Last year, when Tank went out, it was so bad. That's why I thought that when Nico went out, like, there would be some semblance of positive still in the offense. That's why you brought in Stephon Diggs. You have Diggs and Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz and Joe Mixon. They can run the ball really well. It is fascinating how they can run the ball so well, but they can't pass block. Like, how the offensive line can do that. Like that's where it goes back to the intelligence thing. Like, do they just not know what's going on in front of them and just are lost? Or maybe just, like they said, Paul, they're taking too much time in the huddle. Too much time.
Man.
Too much time.
Something else, man. The last night's Thursday night football game was actually a pretty good game. It was a Rams 30-20 victory over the Minnesota Vikings, who, of course, smoked the Texans. The Rams, Sean McVay, they had answers for that Vikings defense. Matt Stafford had a couple of really impressive plays out there. They had Cooper Kupp back. They had Puka Nacua back. And all of a sudden, the Rams are back in the race. But I don't know if this decided the game because the Vikings were down 8 and they were going to have to march about 95 yards with Sam Darnold to win this thing. But the game ended essentially on a safety where Sam Darnold is clearly grabbed on the face mask by a Rams defender and sacked. The Rams defender basically showed his hand that he knew he had screwed up right after it happened. And Darnold gets up saying, hey, where's the face mask call? There's a referee standing right in front of it, and somehow he didn't see it. And really, that's all I can think of today. NFL referees, yet again, biffing in a big spot, and the rules of the league being such that you can't even bail them out.
I mean, and that's why replay is stupid. That's why I don't like replay. I'm over replay.
Well, wouldn't it have helped there?
No, but that's my problem with it, is that why does it exist if you can't fix the problems that are so obvious? Like why do they Major League Baseball is trying the dumbest little things to try to fix their sport. In the minor leagues, they're doing the challenging strikes. They've just introduced in the Arizona Fall League a way where you can challenge check swings that they're trying to bring into the game. Like, they're trying to fix their sport. In football, you can tackle a player by the face mask. It's obvious to every single person on planet Earth, except for the referee who's within
blind
5 yards.
Blind people wouldn't be obvious to them.
Thank you. Good correction there. Good correction. But then they can't fix it. And it's just stupid. So, like, just make everything – not everything has to be reviewable or challengeable. You don't have to have a coach being able to throw the challenge flag. But you have these people in New York who are watching the game for important moments, and they should be able to review stuff and fix it as soon as they see it. They should be able to whistle in before the next play and say, hey, you guys made a mistake. Almost like, we saw – it wasn't New York doing this, but we saw what happened in the Texas game this weekend, where just the longer it took because they were cleaning up the trash, eventually the referee said, you know what, I think I got this wrong. I meant to call offensive pass interference, not defensive pass interference, and they changed it. You should be able to fix this. They probably were not going to win the game, but you never know. This is a guy that we saw, the week before the Texans game, we saw Sam Darnold and Justin Jefferson connect for a 95-yard touchdown pass. Anything's possible. So it is just baffling that they run their sport in a way that allows you to not fix the problems.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, that's kind of part of the game. I mean, we could do our little ref show we open here. Do we like the refs being terrible? B-Mac hit it. Way back in Mission Control.
Who cares about players or the actual game?
In all my years of baseball, I've never seen such an
astute evaluation of a potentially difficult decision.
We came to watch the refs.
I am the law.
Welcome to the Ref Show.
So here's what the referee said about what went down. Referee Trey Blake said this to a pool reporter. The quarterback was facing the opposite direction from me, so I did not have a good look at it. I did not have a look, and I did not see the face mask being pulled, comma, obviously. Umpire Carl Paganelli had secondary responsibility for making the call. I don't know why that was so hard to say, Carl. But he was also blocked, according to Blake. The umpire had players between him and the quarterback, so he did not get a good look at it. He was blocked out as well. So that was the thing. We did not see it, so we couldn't call it. And the play's not reviewable. I think penalties should be reviewable. I don't feel that the automatic review is the best way to go, but in this situation, you'd have needed it. But I do think that you should be able to challenge a call at any moment during the game. All 60 minutes, throw your red challenge flag out there, and if it happens to be about a penalty, they should have the ability to overturn said penalty. I don't understand why the NFL is so hesitant to allow that. I mean, you'd actually be doing the referees a favor if you allow a replay review to overturn a bad call on the field. Instead, now these poor guys are going to be dealing with hate, like that one referee in that, what's a dog food commercial, where he's like,
oh, yeah.
he biffs the call in a game and he's getting death threats on his way home, but he comes home and his dog is the only person who loves him.
I mean,
because he feeds him this like fancy dog food.
I mean, at this point, like, I'm not even sure a dog can love this referee.
Wow, damn, dude.
A cat would, though.
No, a cat definitely would not. Cat definitely would not.
I get what the ref's saying. He's right. He's behind the play. I can see why. I give him a pass on that. And so it's not totally their fault. It's not their fault that the league has poor rules. Because I have a question. Because I guess, is it ever reviewable? I guess a face mask is never reviewable.
No.
Okay.
No. Penalties basically aren't reviewable.
Yeah, because it is a scoring play. So it, in theory, could have automatically been challenged.
That's true, but the penalty part
itself
of it cannot
not.
Be reviewed.
Yeah.
Because someone texted in, wouldn't that fall under all scoring plays being reviewed? No, they truly cannot do that with the penalties. And we'll see what happens. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was calling out the referees for the sack of him where he thought it was soft, essentially. And he didn't get fined for it. Kevin O'Connell was a little bit more measured with his, I guess, takedown of what happened. Basically, he just said exactly what we all saw. You know, it looked like he got a pretty good amount of face mask there. Not going to get into the call or no call and all that stuff. Well, you just did. It's just, I told our team, officiating and all that stuff, for us to talk about that, for us to seek comfort in that, is not how we're going to respond to this. It's just not going to happen. And I'm going to do the same thing right now. I really don't have a comment on whether it was a penalty. It looked like he got a piece of the face mask, but they didn't think so they didn't throw the flag. I feel bad for him. He should be able to say it was clearly a face mask, because it sucks. It's not the reason we lost, because it wasn't the reason they lost. They were not going to probably march down the field 95 yards with Sam Darnold on the road against the Rams. That just probably wasn't going to happen. But at the same time, yeah, there was a face mask. You should be able to say, that was a face mask, WTF, mate.
Yeah, it's he's just trying to protect his wallet there. That's why when the NFL does stuff, I don't understand. They fine Roquan Smith, it sounds like, $16,000 for dislocating Chris Godwin's ankle on a hip drop tackle. But they're not going to worry about stuff like this. They pick and choose what they care about. I find it so strange. The hip drop tackle, something that the Players Association even said last year they don't care about. But then you have moments like this where it's like, guys, we just want. Let the players play. Let Sam Darnold have the opportunity to try to win the game. Give him the chance to throw a pick six or to throw a touchdown and win the game.
Honestly, I don't want Sam Darnold to throw a pick six. I do not want Sam Darnold to have a drop-off this year, because I wanted to at least be able to tell myself that blowout win that the Texans suffered was a true blowout. But now I'm wondering. Now after the Rams won this game, I am wondering if the Vikings fall is right around the corner.
I think we're about four quarters away from them being last place in their division. So,
well, hang on, Joe. Your Chicago Bears have not done a damn thing this year.
It's Marcus Mariota. They're going to win this weekend. Well, actually, we don't know that. But yeah. It could be Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
But
that's true, though. You do. Yeah. They literally against the next game.
Yeah.
Too.
But they literally could be in last place. But I'm with you. I don't think the Sam Darnold story was fun for the first couple weeks, and I think we'll look back at the end of the season and be like, hey. Remember when Sam Darnold was awesome and the Vikings were good?
Probably. One last text from the 409. Penalties can be reviewed. Doesn't that fall under player safety? They review targeting calls. I think they review targeting calls in college football, not the NFL. I don't think that they do it in the NFL. I think that they call it in the NFL occasionally, but I don't think guys get ejected from games in the same way that they do. It is a judgment call for the referees.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes they review it, but I could be wrong on this, honestly, but I feel like targeting in college football is a penalty, and in the NFL, it's unnecessary roughness, illegal hit to the head, or whatever.
Yeah.
Be wrong on that.
No, I think they can't. See, I feel like they review it after the game, and that's when they implement fines and suspensions and penalties, not in the game. So I don't think it's the exact same as college.
So there is a rule. The targeting rule was introduced in 2018. Launching into an opponent with a hit to the head or neck, forcibly hitting a defenseless player on the head or neck area, leading with the crown of the helmet, using any part of the helmet or face mask. I think the difference is no one gets ejected by default.
Yes.
In college football, you're ejected by default until the review happens, and then if it's determined it wasn't intentful, then boom. Anyway, he's Joe and Paul. It is Gallon and George. We are at the grand opening of Bobcat Houston. You want to get here before 2, 10% off parts and supplies, plus there's lunch here, and you can enter to win a brand new Bobcat ZT3000 with a 48-inch deck, an Arctic cooler, or Echo trimmer and blower. Up next, the segment that we do only for ratings. Sorry. Stay put.
All right, coming up this weekend, you got Texans, Colts. Texans favored by 5 points. Great place to go and watch and bet on that game. ESPN Bet at LaBerge in Lake Charles. Best place to go and bet on your Texas teams is LaBerge in Lake Charles. Obviously, not a very far drive. Super easy to get there. You got the 24-foot video wall, 19 betting kiosks, ESPN Bet on your phone, as well as tons of options of how to bet and play while you're there. The casino's a good time. I always recommend going to Ember, the steakhouse. Whenever my wife comes with us on these trips, we always take a stop there. It's always delicious, always good food. So when you leave Texas and bet in your Texas teams, make sure you do it inside ESPN Bet at LaBerge in Lake Charles.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Bobcat of Houston and Porter.
713-780-3776 to call. It's a text. You can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston or on Twitch at ESPN 97.5. Someone from the 832 brings up, they called a targeting call in the L.A. Monday Night Football game. Oh, the one that was on ESPN Plus that no one can watch?
Oh.
Got 1.8 million viewers.
Is that good, you think?
I mean, it's still better than probably what the World Series can hope for, but, I mean, my bad, the Savannah Banana Invitationals. But, yeah.
For being Cardinals, Chargers, ESPN Plus, that's probably not terrible.
It was a perfect storm of no one gives a bleep.
Yeah.
No one likes the Cardinals, and no one likes the Chargers.
Yeah, so that play basically didn't happen. Not enough people saw it.
Right. I refuse to watch the Savannah Bananas Invitational, but I am wearing a Boston Red Sox shirt in protest. Mm. And I don't even like the Red Sox.
Ooh, have you watched the new documentary yet? You going to watch it this weekend?
No, probably not.
Because I saw...
I don't want to fall in love with baseball again based off of something that happened 20 years ago when the sport was way better.
I saw a former... he does ESPN National stuff, so you might hear him on the weekends, Alex Del Barrio. Going on a tweeting rampage about how they treated Nomar and how it was portrayed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm out. Yeah.
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 I might watch it this weekend.
ADB's doing national?
I think so. Oh, at least at one point he
good
was.
Good for ADB. I miss ADB. He's a good guy. Right. So we do this segment for ratings. Sorry. It works, though. We've looked at the numbers. My God, they blow up every single time we do it. People love to talk about or hate on the Dallas Cowboys, who have had a lot of drama to this point this year. It's time for another segment of Playing with the Boys. Knock, knock, knock,
knocking on wood. I want me some glory help.
Prescott, he starts to come and then he pulls out.
How about them Cowboys?
All right, Dallas Cowboy talk time.
Let's go.
You see Troy Aikman taking shots at them? I love this. So Troy Aikman took a multitude of shots at the Dallas Cowboys in Monday Night Football, and it actually got back to the Cowboys. Here's one of those shots. This is Troy Aikman with talking about how the Cowboys failed to sign Derrick Henry this offseason.
Scrimmage. It's got to be a lot of teams out there that had opportunities to bring in Derrick Henry that are kind of kicking themselves for not doing it, but he has been an absolute perfect fit for this Ravens attack.
Aikman also said of his Dallas Cowboys that the team's wideouts run terrible routes and are lazy coming off of the line of scrimmage. Mike McCarthy, in response to this on Monday, said he doesn't agree. They don't carry any weight with me because I watch all the tape. I get to go to the meetings. I'm at practice. I'm part of the games. So I have a clear understanding of what and where. Troy's statement in particular, I don't agree with the word selection. There is definitely need for improvement in every position. Okay, so he's basically saying, yeah, he does agree with the assessment to a degree. He just doesn't like the word lazy.
Yes. If I was a coach, I probably wouldn't like someone else calling my team lazy either. But, facts are facts. I'm gonna trust Troy Aikman on this one.
CeeDee Lamb also asked about these things.
Ooh. First, he said, got to be better overall. Asked if he agreed with Aikman's question, assessment. Next question.
That sounds like a yes to me.
Dak Prescott, when asked about it, whether he got personal, whether he went too far. Once again, the guy gets paid to do that, and he's doing a job. Once again, a job he knows is going to create a ruckus. The last thing I'm allowed to do is create division inside this building. Oh, boy.
Oh, so Dak, you know, is he saying that if he fights back against Troy Aikman, that Jerry Jones might take Troy Aikman's side over Dak's? Mm-hmm. Is that what he's worried about there?
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. That would be very funny. Dak snaps back at Troy Aikman, and then Jerry, during his weekly radio interview, goes, well, Troy Aikman won me a Super Bowl.
He could do that. By the way, guess who's back on the radio?
Jerry.
Jerry Jones. This is the beginning of his interview on 105.3 The Fan, an interview he does every single week with Sean and RJ.
Hey, good to be on with you guys.
Oh, man, that stings. That stings, Jerry. RJ's the only one not here today.
Well, did he want to avoid the confrontation?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Jerry, what do you want to say, if anything, about last week?
I don't have anything to say about last week. I'm happy, though, that I'm surprised that last week got the attention it got.
I'm surprised the last week got the attention they got. I love it.
Oh, what a lie. What a lie. Jerry knew as soon as he said it.
You can hear the words F-U hissing between everybody involved's teeth in this interaction. They're playing nice at the beginning. Jerry's credit, he did do 20 minutes of interviews after that sequence happened. And, I mean, if you're one of the people working at that station, you got to be pretty pumped that that happened, even if you are mad at him. We'll see if it happens again the rest of the way.
Oh, it will.
Definitely.
Feels like it's almost, it might be more of an over-under of how many times does it happen again.
It's bizarre the way he just doesn't enjoy the questions that are being asked. Like, Jerry, well, this is how it works, man. We're asking you about what's going on. More on the Dallas Cowboys. Brandon Aubrey's in jury duty. The best Dallas Cowboy, their kicker, he is in jury duty. But apparently, he's still going to play on Sunday because he's been practicing after his court times.
Okay.
So he's kicking under the lights, I guess, at an abandoned Cowboys practice facility.
I thought that wasn't allowed. I thought like part of being on jury duty was you weren't allowed to have like contact with the outside world, so you didn't have biases. I've never been on a jury, so.
I don't know how it works either. I feel like if it maybe in a situation like with O.J. Simpson's trial,
yeah.
With just due to the high profile of it, they tried to keep the jurors to themselves. But, yeah, I feel like you'd still be able to do this job. You're a kicker.
Yeah.
You just have to show up and kick and get your kicks in during the week. And he is the best kicker in the NFL. I do feel like it would be very difficult for him to show up and suck.
Just imagine them losing a game and then the Jerry Jones interview.
Oh, yeah. Well,
him talking about the jury duty costing the Cowboys a win.
Start bitching about the mayor of Dallas and yeah. About the Texas State Legislature or whatever, yep. Something else.
Should have stepped in and got him off of it.
Yeah. One last thing. There's a big controversy this week, but something we already knew about. Like, the Dallas Cowboys give tours out to people at Jerry World, and these people get to walk by the gym, which has this big glass window in front of it. So basically, randos can just walk into the Cowboys facility and oogle on folks who are doing squats, deadlifts, bench press, etc. And it's weird. And it's led to a variety of different statements from Cowboy players who some don't like it, but then a lot of the guys who were quoted as saying they don't like it responded saying, like, oh, but it's not that bad after this article came out. So a lot of drama in all of the strangest places, as always, with your Dallas Cowboys, America's team.
They need to quit complaining. People looking at you like a fishbowl.
I mean, it is a little weird.
It is weird.
We have to deal with that on the radio from time to time.
Yeah, it's fine when you're out, but it is always weird in the studio when, like, the former lieutenant or current lieutenant governor.
Yes, I mean
former lieutenant governor.
The former
whatever he is,
Dan Patrick, randomly just steps into the producer's room and then walks out. The yeah. Randomest thing I've seen, and I mean. In that same room, I have also seen my one, ex-girlfriend,
yes.
And two, the boss who fired me.
Yes.
That room.
Within the last... Has all that happened this year?
All that is in the last calendar year. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, you've had some adventures through that. We need to start putting a lock on. I think.
Yes, I would like a lock. I don't want anyone oogling at me.
Yeah,
I would like to lock it. You know what? Yeah, I want something in the studio that I can throw out at the fishbowl glass. And I would, if I'm one of these Cowboys players, I'd be pissed off about that for sure.
It could be worse, though.
It could be worse. Everything can be worse. Anyway, that is Playing with the Boys, Galan and George. We are live at Bobcat of Houston up in Porter for their grand opening. You want to get here before 2 o'clock, you can get 10% off of parts and supplies. There's lunch here, and you can enter to win a brand new Bobcat ZT3000. I don't know what that means, but it sounds cool. With 48-inch deck. I don't know what that means either. Arctic cooler or an Echo trimmer and blower. It's a very cool spot. We got tractors and all sorts of other things that are laid out right in front of us for all of your getting stuff done needs. Anyway, he's Joe. I'm Paul. Up next, I guess we have to talk about the Savannah Bananas Invitational that's starting tonight, the baseball thing that no one wants to watch. Ugh. Stay put.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Bobcat of Houston and Porter with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
I don't want to watch this thing tonight.
I ain't watching. I got more important things to do.
Taxes.
Try to figure out if I'm getting puked on or not.
Yeah, your child he's got the Ebola, huh?
He got some.
I hope I don't get it.
I think you're okay. You want me to leave? You want me to leave? I'll take the rest of the day off.
I will say, I remember one time a coworker of mine, his kid had strep throat. He comes into work.
Oh.
And I get strep throat the next day.
That's tough.
And this person denied that I got it from his kid. And I was like, dude, where else would I have got it from?
Yeah.
Sadly, I'm not making out with everybody that moves. It would have been great to get it like that. Or a little mono or something. It was like, but he was so angry and in such denial about it. I was like, all right, dude.
No. That's
probably you.
No, you got to – it's you know what? You got to take accountability if something like that happens. Take responsibility.
How often do you get sick? Just having a—I know you're not sick right now, but how often do you get sick having a kid?
Not as much as I thought I would.
Okay.
Honestly, more when he was younger. It felt like I get him sick more than anything. The two times he got the vid was from me, so it was my fault. Take the blame on that one.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was tough.
R.I.P.
He didn't die.
Well, hey, sounded like it. So, the Los Angeles team and the New York team are playing in the Savannah Bananas Invitational. The team that wins the best of seven might get a chance to play in an exhibition against a baseball team that actually matters. I don't sound bitter at all.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't at all. Wearing a Boston Red Sox shirt on the anniversary of 2004 and 20 years, and the fact that the Red Sox also beat the Dodgers in the World Series. A World Series I did not root for them in. I'm very curious about this one. People are – I don't like to do TV ratings talk, but everyone's saying, yeah, this is the World Series that is going to get people to watch.
Well
– do you believe that? I know here it's definitely not the case.
If it doesn't, the sport is on washed watch for sure. Because the argument's always been that, like, it's turned into a local product, right? Like, that's who cares the most. But most sports – you have the local attention, but you also see massive national attention from that. You know, you see Minnesota with big TV ratings for the Super Bowl, and you'll see Kansas City with big TV ratings for the NBA Finals and things like that. This is Yankees Dodgers. If this doesn't pull in the average person to watch, when you have a freak in Aaron Judge, one of the biggest baseball players we've ever seen, and you have Shohei Ohtani, the biggest unicorn we've probably ever seen in sports, to be able to do what he can accomplish. If that doesn't pull in that with it being Yankees, Dodgers, then the national audience will not ever exist again. This is going to tell people a lot about like what the future of baseball is, honestly. So I don't know if people are going to watch the way they think they're going to, though. Like I don't think people here.
They're definitely not going to watch here.
Yeah.
I feel like this city might have the lowest ratings for the World Series. Even with the weirdly large amount of Yankees and Dodgers fans that live here, I feel like their
will be the lowest market audience here.
Yeah, I definitely see that because you hate them. Like, unless people are just hate watching, but you hate, but typically, like, if it was Dodgers, if it was Yankees, Mets, you'd have a lot of people from Houston watching because we would be kind of rooting for the Mets because to beat
the
Yankees.
But yeah, you're right. Yeah,
so, like, that's what most people would be. Yeah. Yeah, right. But like you, like, what are you like rooting for Yankees, Dodgers besides what we talked about the other day, for Bane to come out from underneath Yankee Stadium? Like there's not much to root for in this one. So I don't think here it'll be big-time ratings. And I'm curious what it looks like, but I'm not convinced that, like, they're going to see, like, some spike in ratings because of who's playing.
Mm. I don't feel it like it's coming. I do get a little bit of joy knowing that fans are being told to walk 1.2 miles to the Chavez Ravine because the expectation is that traffic is going to make it impossible to get to Dodger Stadium. As someone who's driven in that traffic before for a game that wasn't a very important one, but it was on a Saturday, I can totally understand how that would bottleneck. It is not easy to get up there. It's a beautiful stadium. I do actually enjoy Dodger Stadium. Even though the first time I went there, we sat in this section of gangs.
Oh, yeah.
The Cali Pirates.
I remember that story.
Dude with the, yeah, some guy, cue ball, giant P on the back of his head. Like, he's from Pittsburgh? Huh? Wow. Oh, you're like, oh, nope, it's the Cali Pirates throwing up gang signs the whole time. Poor Usher's trying to tell him to stop throwing up gang signs. So, yeah, apparently you got to walk 1.2 miles from a nearby train station to get to the game.
I mean, this is cooler outside. You know, it's not in the middle of the summer having to walk. Well, and it'll be, like, people give Astros fans a hard time for not showing up on time. That stadium is often very empty at the start of games because it's such, because it bottlenecks so much going into it. So, I don't know. This is, maybe the deeper the series goes, I'll feel differently. But just like where I'm at right now, like, I don't feel like that attraction to game one on a Friday night. Maybe it was last night or Wednesday night, I would have felt differently. Like, you know, the World Series, you start, like, always on a Tuesday. If it was a Tuesday night and there's nothing going on, I would feel differently. But because I don't like the Yankees and I don't like the Dodgers, I just don't have this, like, sudden appeal to, you know, sit down on a Friday night and watch a World Series game of two teams I hate.
Yeah, I'm not in. Unless Susie Waldman somehow fights her way into the broadcast booth. Susie Waldman is the color commentator for the Yankees radio broadcast, which also features John Sterling. I actually enjoy John Sterling. Susie Waldman is like this cartoonish voice that I feel like is a really fun combination with John Sterling. I actually enjoy them both in combination, but I like to make fun of the two. Susie Waldman's not happy about Dodger Stadium.
I can still see that, and it better be padded, because if Juan Soto runs into that, I'll kill them myself.
Yeah, get the axe that you would throw with Meredith and throw it right at them. Just throw an axe at them.
She said she'll kill the Dodgers herself if they don't pad the walls of their stadium.
Because if Juan Soto runs into it.
Right, because he's only 19 years old, so, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, just maybe don't run to the wall, dude. Look where you're going.
I do think he opened your eyes. I think Aaron Judge ran into the wall a couple
of
years back or something like that, and they were very upset about that. No, I mean, that's part of the beauty of baseball. Some of these ballparks, you run into the wall, you're gonna hurt.
Well, the irony of that is that with Michael Kay, who she's doing that interview with by chance?
No, she was on with Tiki and Tierney.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever the show is.
Because Michael Kay was bitching about this the opposite way, remember? Like a month and a half ago?
Yeah.
About Wrigley?
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, you know what?
It's a brick wall, isn't it?
Yeah, Wrigley, I understand.
Does the IV provide any cushion?
Not if you run full speed.
Okay.
If you just,
some cushion.
Yeah.
Like falling through a tree on your way down from a building.
Yeah, like you might not die if you hit it, but enough cushion for that.
Yeah, not a lot of cushion.
Okay. Yeah, not much.
Got it. All right. Well, it's Kalon and George. We are at Bobcat of Houston up in Porter. You want to jump in, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text, and you can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston or on Twitch at ESPN 975. Coming up next, the Texans are going up against someone on Sunday who owns them, and I'm not talking about Jonathan Taylor. You're going to be pissed off when you hear this stat. Stick around, Kalon and George.
ESPN 97.5.